The following podcast contains adult language, explicit content, and original opinions.
All content is the opinion of Comics Brew and no one else.
It is meant for mature audiences only, so be warned.
Okay, Tyler, do you have all the stuff you need to record? You got your comics?
Yeah, I got a comic.
You got your beer? Okay, yeah. Let me see. Like, I've got my reader. I've got my beers. I've got no smokes. Almost 8 months, no smokes.
If you want one, we can have some Adam. I mean, I kind of want to smoke. And, I mean, Adam.
He said he was going to be here, right?
Wait.
You talked to him?
Oh.
Is he not coming? Did you not tell us that he's not coming?
Oh.
Okay. Well,
I don't know where he is.
I'm kind of boned on this because I was just going to go ham on whatever he said. And if I don't have him to be here, I don't know if I could tee off on anybody's face.
Dude, I don't know what we're going to do about this.
I'm worried, and that's weird for me by all stretches of the imagination.
We might just have to wing it.
I mean, you know, let's be dope, bro.
Let's be dope, bro.
I mean, I'm still scared. Like, I've never done this before without Adam. There were literally not hundreds of episodes before him.
Were there hundreds?
There were tens.
I don't know. It's like a muscle I haven't used in so long.
I'm scared.
I'm scared.
Comics Brew. Welcome back to Comics Brew, episode number 242.
And it's just
for
two
you.
Of us. Just the two. Oh, I'm Tyler. Just the two of us.
Yeah, I'm not going to name myself after that one.
I'm
Adam.
But
and we can podcast if we try.
We can podcast if we want to.
We can
leave our friend behind.
We can cast.
No friend of mine. Anyways.
I don't know, it's kind of a, this is the second week in a row we did some stupid song shit. Last week, I really hope you left in that April 22nd, 1992 thing that Adam and I did.
No, I didn't.
Why? You checked it out?
Because it was impossible to edit in a way that, like, flowed.
Oh, whatever.
And worked.
Just fucking let
and
it
And you guys left perfect breaks for me to cut that whole thing out. So I did. I got rid of it.
But there was a riot on streets down there. Where were you?
It was a little rough. Let's just say that. I can re-put it in. I'll give you the file just for you.
No. I don't give a shit. If I really wanted to, I'll just listen to the song.
Yeah, exactly. It's better. It's much better.
It's much better. You know what is much better?
What?
I don't know. What is much better?
Everything. My beer, actually.
It's much better than mine.
Yeah, so what I've got... Are you ready for this doozy of a beer?
Well, I have had it, so yes.
Yeah, well, the listeners, are you guys ready?
Well, it's a rhetorical question.
It's called Collaboration 7.
Which is what we're not doing here.
Yeah, it's from Boulevard Brewing Company out of Kansas, Missouri, Creature Comforts Brewing Company out of Athens, Georgia, and Arizona Wilderness Brewing Company, presumably out of Arizona.
It's from Phoenix. Oh, shit.
Probably. It's an oak-aged lager with peach, lemon zest, and Riesling grape juice.
So I thought, as far as I know, Riesling grape juice is just wine.
Well, Riesling is a type of wine.
I
think maybe Riesling is a type of grape now, but I'm going...
Now?
Well,
they just brought it out in 2015.
Now I think that because Riesling grape juice makes me think like maybe that's a type of grape. And it makes a special kind of wine or grape juice.
Or it's like a juicy juice brand.
Something like that, yeah. But this is actually a pretty nice beer. It's got a little bit of a strong zest to it, I think.
Riesling is a white grape variety which originated in the Rhine region of Germany.
It makes delicious wines.
Yeah, it's a white wine. I don't know about that.
It's also a dessert wine.
It is.
I'm fine with that. Really sweet. Mm,
Rieslings are disgusting.
I love them. But I also have...
because
this was a... This collaboration was kind of tiny. I got another beer. It comes in a can. It's from Rheingeist Brewing Company.
Another German.
And also another company, I assume, but it doesn't quite really tell me. But it is a Melvin collaboration beer called Experimental J-Hole Red India Pale Ale.
What's a J-Hole?
I don't know.
If I have to ask, can I afford it?
Well, let me see. Oh, wait. No, I can tell you exactly why it's called J-Hole.
Okay, let's
see. I'm going to read off the can here. You ready?
I mean,
this brewmans began with a mutual respect for the lupulin arts. Lupulin arts? Lupulin Arts. Refined in Melvin's Brew Temple, high in the Tetons of Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Oh, nice.
J-hole. reunited at sea level, we form like Voltron to bring you this red IPA. An avalanche of hops swarms the palate with malt soft as powder, balancing out this spectacular, lupulin. Oracular brew.
Lupulin. Lupulin.
Lupulin.
I've got the phonetic spelling right here.
So, it's Melvin Brewing Company and Rheingeist Brewing Company, I guess.
A bitter yellowish powder found on the glandular hairs beneath the scales of the flowers of the female hop plant.
Ah, well, there you go. What do you got?
Lupulin.
We learned new things
today. We did. I have a rare miss from Puyallup Brewing Company.
I mean, I don't think it's that bad.
Blackberry Cobbler. Now, that sounds amazing. Blackberry mm-hmm. Cobbler, that's great. But this is an American-style golden ale with blackberries, vanilla beans, and lactose. And I think I went wrong by getting a golden ale. I haven't really historically liked those.
I mean, yeah, I think that sounds about right. I like that beer, actually.
It doesn't have enough blackberry in it for me. You know,
it just doesn't have enough of that taste.
It's just too light. Yeah. Like it's kind of funky, but not the kind of funky that I like. It's like a 1970s funk where I'm more about the late 60s. I've also got Avalanche. That's a winter ale from Snoqualmie Falls. And I've been on like a winter ale kick recently, probably because it's fucking winter.
What makes a winter ale a winter ale?
I don't know, but Avalanche is brewed to take on the chill of the Northwest winter. We start with two-row pale Munich and aromatic and special B malts and add Northwest hops. The result is a deep red, complex, and hoppy ale. To keep things new and interesting for you and us, we tweak our seasonal beers every year. Go to our website to find out how.
Oh, well, Snoqualmie Falls Brewing Company. Maybe I won't.
For the best of times.
I do want to taste that beer when you open it.
Yeah, for sure. I will get you a taste. Well, I'll get you some. I said with too much spit in my mouth.
guess what this week is?
Huh?
Guess what this week is?
It's the last...
Your week for news!
It's like the last full week of January?
Yes. Is it? No. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
But it depends on where you start a week.
I start a week on Sunday.
Then it's not. Because yeah, this Sunday
coming up
is going to start. Okay, so I guess when this comes out, yeah, it's the last full week of January.
Oh, so when we record live, like yeah, that joke that you live. Fucking love.
Oh man, sorry. The weekend was so crazy. I went to my work party. Oh, I'm all fucking hungover. I don't know what day it is.
Before we get into news, man, let's discuss real quick. Baxter Knottweiler's dead.
Oh, yeah. That episode happened, came out.
That happened last week.
It was pretty epic. As a character, I did what I could to dissuade you from your quest.
Sure did. Even mostly, talk to the dead.
Mostly, well, quote unquote. No, I actually did talk to the dead. You did. That's right. I was going to pretend.
But you also, like, so I just edited that episode, right? So you're like, the Golden Company in there? And the guy's like, yes. And you're like, this is a beast deciding if it's a specific thing alive. And you're like, oh, yeah, fuck.
Yeah. I personally really enjoyed, because part of the reason I picked Dead Wizard as one of my talents is because the backstory of the character was like, used to be a wizard,
mm-hmm.
and I liked the little utility of cantrips, and I liked that I finally got to use them in a way that I wanted, which was just...
To mess with me.
Just to mess with people.
Yeah.
They're not major effects. It's not like I can, you know, fool a whole town, but maybe one person, I can make lights appear and pretend I'm contacting the dead.
And I told Chris, like, I wanted to roll intelligence against that because I'm dumb.
Yeah, we probably should have, but I do think, yeah, Baxter went out well.
Yeah.
True to character.
And not fucking dead either.
Yeah, he didn't. He will come back, yeah, I imagine.
It's going to suck.
I think if we ever come back there, like if, I mean,
the hellhole.
Morgo has no guilt, but if yeah. one of, I guess if Vic has guilt and we come back.
It would be Vic was willing to go in with me. Well, Adam that was like, fuck this, I'm out.
No, what I mean is like Morgo and Argon will not go back there.
They don't give a shit.
They don't have any
there's no
personal motivation to come back. Yeah. Vic literally might come back.
Literally no dog in the fight.
Yeah, we have no dog in that fight. But Vic may, if we come back in the area, want to go check back.
Maybe.
So I think if that happens, Chris will bring back Baxter, but I guess we'll see.
He'll probably bring back Baxter anyway.
Either way, yeah, he probably will.
So I like I would love to tell the audience what my next character is going to be, but
you'll
that's
see.
A close guarded secret for just the guys in the game right now.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good character. It'll mesh well.
It'll mesh well with Vic, I think.
Especially in terms of combat, it will be helpful. I was a little worried you were going to... I will say one thing about it. I was worried you would pick a caster.
Oh, yeah, no.
Because that would have just fucked us. You did pick a caster.
I did not pick a caster. How about that?
Yeah, you did not pick a caster. So I think combat and gameplay-wise and character-wise, it'll all melt.
I'm going to be fun.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. So when's that one going to come out? 3 weeks?
Let's see. We're recording that. We're recording in a week and a half. February. So, from this episode, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Four weeks out? Okay. Yeah. Well, in a month, check it out. You guys are going to like it.
Don't worry. We'll hype it. I remember something that Jonathan Tweet said. He's like, you know, with the dogs, with the loyalty of that character, you might find yourself in some interesting situations. And I'm like, fuck, guess so.
Yeah, it happened.
Yeah. But enough of stroking poor Baxter's dead ego. Let's talk about some news. The comic book industry is rife with news. Not all of it troubling. Actually, yeah. None of it troubling, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, none of it troubling. Last weekend, so I'm talking about like the 13th and 14th, DC held an event in DC called DC in DC. Jesus Christ. It was like a 4-hour press event followed by like a museum tour. A lot of things were announced during that. There was people from all across DC Entertainment, from the TV shows to the movies to comic books. And
it's a lot of stuff, a lot of announcements.
Yeah, like they had, you know, some of the cast of Arrow was there. I mean, Black Lightning's first episode premiered something with Black Lightning.
Okay.
They also, the people there got to see Gotham by Gaslight.
Yeah, that's what I was a little jealous about. I've heard that's really good.
That's out later this week. Tom King had a huge announcement. He announced The Aftermath. Battle and Trauma in... that's not what he announced. He announced the movie, a comic called Sanctuary.
Yeah, this actually sounds really interesting. He announced it... I almost talked about it last week, but I don't know. I didn't have enough time to really read it.
Or stew on it.
Yeah, I think it's something to think about, and I do like the whole idea behind it.
So the comic is called, like I said, Sanctuary. And Tom King says, we're creating something where it's sort of like a crisis center for superheroes. It's going to be DC-wide, all the superheroes, and it's going to be a place where these characters who are living violent lives every single day is going to be able to congregate. We're creating a place superheroes can go that mimics the good work people are doing for veterans around the world, where they can have a space where they can actually admit that this violence has had its consequences for them and has affected them mentally. So that your greatest heroes who are inspiring... our children can say proudly, yes, I suffer from mental difficulties, namely Batman.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting avenue. I don't know if they've ever... they probably explored on a character-by-character basis.
I imagine in characters like Black Widow or Bucky Barnes, people that have actually suffered legitimate military trauma.
But it's interesting that DC is specifically... It's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As far as I can tell, it will be ongoing, and Tom King is all about this. He not only served in the armed forces himself.
He's a golden boy nowadays.
Yeah. He's DC's big boy, man. Him and Snyder, dude, they're like top dogs.
They're killing it.
Yeah. Jeff Johns is just like watching over from the side of the ring. He's like, yes, you did well, children. Because, you know, he can't.
The mastermind pulling the strings.
Exactly. Dance, puppets, dance. I'm excited to see where this goes, and I will definitely give Sanctuary my first look.
Yeah, I will definitely check it out.
There was a lot that happened to DC and DC, and we could talk about that for days. Actually, something else did happen to DC and DC, and it's later on in the news.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Jonathan Hickman. So...
we all love Jonathan
Hickman. What do we have to say about Jonathan Hickman? He's an excellent architect. Things.
Ex-Marvel architect. He is his own. He has a lot of independent comics. The man is obsessed with charts and graphs, essentially.
Yeah, and he has, like, this really deep love for, like, super complex and convoluted stories.
Meticulously plotted
stories.
Yeah,
exactly, right? Well, he's actually also pretty active on the Twitterverse, and he just happened to be mad tweeting last week, and... decided that he said, I have to write something soon. Pick your poison. And he listed four things. The Eternals, The Legion of Superheroes, The New Gods, and The X-Men.
Oh,
and
then
he also listed potential storylines.
That's what I'm
going to
say. That's what I think is more interesting.
So he listed The Death of the Eternals, Who Killed the Legion of Superheroes, The New Gods, and X-Men Here Lies Chris Claremont. Now, having somewhat of an active presence on Twitter, my personal account, I decided that, yes, I would vote. And I voted for Legion of Superheroes because
that sounds like a
someone
story.
Needs to fucking bring them back and needs to do it well.
Oh, man. Okay, if you had read his...
FF.
Not FF. His Secret Warriors.
Oh, okay.
Because what he did with Secret Warriors is first couple arcs are the Secret Warriors team that starts out.
Mm-hmm.
We got Quake, JT, I think they call him Hellfire. The in S.H.I.E.L.D., the dude with the chain that goes through the chain room.
No,
that,
I know.
That's
I know
him.
You're talking about. Yeah.
That's him. We have...
Are they all Inhuman?
In the comic, no.
Okay.
They're in the comic, they're based off of... it's from Fury's Caterpillar Files, which they use in the show. It's basically like, okay, the whole idea started from Quake. Her dad is Dr. Hyde.
Yeah.
The damage he did to himself genetically and giving himself powers, he had a child after that, and that passed to her.
Gotcha, yeah,
and
yeah.
And that's
yeah.
how she got her powers. And it's the same with almost every other person in the Caterpillar Files. Like, their parents have some type of ability
that
or
metamorphosed
alteration.
Into them.
Yeah, that when they're born, they're
I
like...
I don't know why you said Caterpillar.
Because that's what it's called. Like, the Fury calls it his Caterpillar Files.
Why, though? What's the significance?
Because they're little caterpillars who could blossom into...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't put that together.
Yeah, like, like they have the potential to be something
Fuck.
Greater. And so he puts together
who
this
Fury
team.
Fury was romantic, man.
But part of the thing is, first two arcs are like them, but then it breaks into this big shadow war between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra. It turns out there is, like... four other teams.
Okay.
And we get to see all of them. And you get to... The series got not cut short in that it was, like, suddenly canceled, but Hickman went from, like, wanting to do, like, a 50, 60-episode run, or issue run, to I think it ended at, like, 28 or 30.
Okay.
So it cut short, so we didn't get a huge expansion. But where I'm going with it is the other teams and what he did with it. He was able to manage a large cast of diverse characters.
Oh, so like the 30 people in Legion of Superheroes?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, even though we only got a little bit of them, he did every character, like, I thought he did them all justice.
Yeah.
And him being on a Legion of Superheroes book, especially, like you mentioned, FF, after doing FF, he knows he can do a family. Like, the Legion is kind of a big family.
Yeah, with, like, there's, like, Mommy and Daddy are, like, Saturn Girl and Brainiac. Also, like, Karate Kid and
yeah, like, I mean, there's a long, like, the more popular ones, they could be the main characters, but he could do a lot of the extra ones, too. I think, like you, I think that is the best option on there.
I think so, too.
I mean, maybe Death of the Eternals might be fun.
I don't even remember who the Eternals are.
The Eternals are...
Wait a minute, there's near Celestials, right?
The Celestials created them.
That's right,
like,
yeah.
They created the Eternals and the Deviants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was their first experiments on Earth. Like, Thanos is an Eternal of Titan.
Yeah.
And they created them on every world that they mm-hmm. went to.
Yeah, I remember now.
But
it's really laid out in Universe X, is when they lay it out, like, the whole history of it.
I think so. Yeah,
it's like a. I'm saying it's like a three page thing where they just lay out cosmic Marvel from top tier to the bottom tier.
Yeah, and it's all at the top. It's Celestials, and all the way down, it's like they fucked with this.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And then there, now you have the Kree.
Yeah. So I really think if he, dude, I really hope that these are actual options that he has in front of him.
Maybe, yeah. But either way, the one that won, sorry to keep it waiting, was X-Men Here Lies Chris Claremont.
We're not going to do soap operas anymore. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah. I like that title, too. It's just, like, it's time for the X-Men to change, dude. Not change as far as, like, who they are, but let's get some new, like, stories in there, man.
I think that they could keep doing the... I mean, because since Chris Claremont's run, X-Men has been a big soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that works when you have dramatic... Like, characters who are inherently dramatic or prone to it, like teenagers, which is mostly what the X-Men
have
been.
Yeah, but Cyclops having that fucking whiny baby position for
yeah, no, that,
15 years...
That doesn't work. That's why he was so much better when, like, after... Decimation, like M-Day.
Yeah, when he got,
he
like,
got
fucking militant.
He got amazing.
Yeah, and do you remember the Avengers
Utopia?
Utopia?
I have that on my shelf. That so is one I. of the best X-Men stories I've ever read.
Yeah, I like that.
Like his TV Avengers. Address, his TV address, like
leave he's us talking the about, fuck alone.
Like we're still gonna do. Like he says something like, "We're still gonna do everything we always done. We're still going to defend people in a world that hates and fears us. Only now we shall all be free." Like,
yep.
It like that was amazing, and what I think is. Like you said, X-Men.
It's also
evolve.
Like the fucking root of Avengers vs. X-Men. It's
yeah.
Right into
from there.
Yeah.
X-Men should move forward, but in a way that, like, I think there's still a place for the old soap opera shit in the, like, the teen X-Men books.
Yeah.
The younger
that
generation.
Are existing right now.
But the older ones should go the other way.
Yeah, we should see some maturity from them.
Exactly.
And there's nothing saying that we can't.
Cyclops should come back.
We can also bring back the original team and not make it overly dramatic by like making Iceman a homosexual or
yeah,
or
that's still
like that.
Big. That's still just like the biggest.
Like why?
The biggest token gay thing ever made.
I know, and it was almost pointless.
Bobby has always been a player. He's always been at least like maybe not a player, but like kind of center of attention, always trying to be a ladies' man.
Yeah.
Which I guess an argument can be made. He was just trying because he's been gay the whole time.
Yeah.
Fuck that. You just wanted to.
You just want to add
Bendis,
diversity.
You just wanted to add a curveball.
Yeah. It's odd, but you know, whatever. I mean, you got to roll with it, right? At least
yeah.
Not, like we can bitch and whine about it, but that's about it.
Hold on. Chase's beer.
That is really good.
Yeah, it is. I opened my Melvin Experimental J-Hole. This is the best red I've ever had.
That is amazing.
It doesn't even taste like an IPA.
No, it doesn't, but it has some of the notes. Like, it's not
without
bitter.
The bitterness.
Yeah.
Though. It's got the little bit
the
of citrusy, kick, but
yeah.
Not enough, not bitter. I like it a lot.
Well, we can expect something or nothing from this Twitter poll. It's a fucking Twitter poll, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, those are the options. Something or nothing.
Well,
but
I mean,
hope it is something.
Hopefully it is something. We haven't seen Jonathan Hickman do a Capes book in a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he ended his Marvel Comics run with...
Secret Wars?
Secret War.
Yeah.
Secret Wars, which was a fucking fantastic send-off.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've seen much from him since.
Well, we're going to stay on the Marvel hype train for the rest of the... for most of the news from here on.
Choo-choo!
Marvel has hired a publisher, and as far as I knew, they didn't have a publisher until recently, but apparently they did. The brand hired industry veteran John Nee to fill the role vacant left after they promoted Dan Buckley to president.
I knew it was somebody with a B name. I was trying to think of a different person.
For those of you who don't know what publisher's responsibility is, Nee will oversee the health of the comics line both in print and digital forms, be tasked with ensuring the quality of the line, managing budgets, as well as guiding some of the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Buckley recently informed staff as to why now is the best time to bring a new publisher on board. So Buckley, the guy who got promoted, why it's best time to bring a new publisher on board and why Nee is the right person for the job. Buckley said, "This was more of the right time than the best. Our comics and prose businesses have many opportunities in front of them, and each of those opportunities requires a certain amount of expertise. We feel John can provide us with that expertise for each of these opportunities. John has a comprehensive background that makes him uniquely qualified for this role. He has a depth and breadth of experience in gaming, consumer products, prose, publishing, collectibles, and most importantly, comics. For those of you who don't know, John Nee was the president of Wildstorm Comics when Jim Lee sold the studio back to DC Comics in 1998, where he joined DC as a vice president.
Mm.
While with DC, he oversaw business development for Wildstorm and the CMX manga imprint. DC promoted Nee to senior vice president of business development in 2007.
Sometimes I feel like comic book management is all one big incestuous family. Like, it all just crosses over.
It
like,
does, dude.
Like, they're all the same shit. But whatever. I think it's good they got. You need somebody in that role at the end of the day. Somebody has to fill that role. So hopefully this does work out for him.
In 2010, Nee moved into tabletop gaming, trading cards, and collectibles industry when he then co-founded and became CEO of Cryptozoic Entertainment. They were they're responsible for the World of Warcraft trading card game, DC Comics deck building game. Epic Spell Wars of the Battle Wizards, Duel at Mount Skullfry, that's one.
Skullsfire,
excuse
me. That's Skullsfire.
Yeah.
Skullsfire, I love
me.
It.
He also worked with other major brands, including Adventure Time, Ghostbusters, The Walking Dead, and Rick and Morty. Nice. So, this is like Another on top of several moves that Marvel's made recently. Axel Alonso left as editor-in-chief. They brought on C.B. Cebulski as editor-in-chief. Now they've got a new publisher. Their old publisher was just promoted to president.
Yeah, they've had some big shakeups.
Some big moves in Marvel, and I wonder if we'll see that kind of trickle down into some new creative choices.
Probably. I mean, they already have... it's kind of weird. I saw an article the other day. Actually, maybe it was this... No, it was the other day. Three of their comics that were nominated for GLAAD Awards
were
canceled.
Really?
Yeah. Three award-winning comics they canceled based on poor sales. So it seems like they can create...
A quality story.
A quality story, but they're putting it in a place that, you know, the reality is it doesn't sell that well. So hopefully with a little shake-up, they can put good creators... good artists, good writers, all that shit, in a place where it'll also sell well.
Yeah.
And they maybe need to stop. A little new direction will help.
Yeah, and maybe that new direction is not everything is an event. You know?
Hopefully.
Maybe that new direction is to, like, let's calm down a little bit and maybe let our writers tell a cogent story.
I would be totally fine if Marvel did an event every year, if they did it sort of like how DC is doing Doomsday Clock. Like, Doomsday Clock is not touching main continuity until Doomsday Clock is done.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, I think, with Marvel's event, like event fatigue, was because an event happened, but it happened line-wide. So, like, you can't just read a Captain America book. You got to read a Captain America book that ties into
Sam
whatever
Wilson,
the hell is going on.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Like, pick an event in the last 10 years, and every Captain America book has been a part of it, and its story has been derailed by that book. Like, the one exception is maybe Ed Brubaker's.
But yeah, it was but even then, it spun out of Civil War.
Exactly. It spun out of Civil War. Like, all of it, it's all, like, their biggest things always dovetail out of these events.
Yeah, but then it also crossed over with, like, Captain America crossed back over with, like, Siege and shit.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean. It always, the events become a line-wide thing, so even the individual titles.
Yeah, no, I know. But, back. Like, you were saying, the only one it might have been Brubaker's. Gap, but I mean, during the Secret Invasion and shit, like, he crossed over.
Yeah, so
it would be like, come back in 2 weeks, next week, here he is.
But if, like, I'm loving Doomsday Clock, but I'm loving just as much that there's not Doomsday Clock tie-ins.
Yeah, and I'm, we can make the exception about Metal, because those are, they're like single tie-ins.
Yeah, they're not running a whole event.
Yeah, that have to do with, but there are tie-ins. There's like,
but they're not in the monthly books.
Sure, they fuck are. Well, Suicide Squad, Justice League, and
I mean, they're not. The tie-ins aren't running the whole span of the event, are they?
No, they've all come in and gone out. So Nightwing, Batman,
that's what I mean.
Justice League, Suicide Squad, Teen Titans. They've all dipped a toe in and then come back out.
See, that's a better thing than what Marvel has done in the last decade, which is like.
Well, I mean, DC's just as guilty of it, man.
Exactly. I'm saying Metal.
But Marvel's
probably,
just done it more.
Yeah, Metal is probably the best, the quote unquote best example of how to do it close to right, and that, like, their spinoff things are short. There's the
one shots,
Dark Knight's one shots. There's Batman Lost, Hawkman Found, whatever.
Mm-hmm. There's also,
and then the monthlies have dipped a toe in and stepped out, and then after Metal ends, this is where it's going to really catch up.
Yeah.
Marvel has full force slammed everything into this event and saw sales drop as a result.
My only counterpoint to that is Blackest Night and Brightest Day, where DC overdid it.
True.
Blackest Night, the whole event is 75 issues across all of their lines. And Brightest Day is like 127 issues across all their lines.
Because that was a year long.
It was, but it hit every one of their lines. And even, like, in some cases, Brightest Day would start in Justice League and hop over to Justice Society and then hop back to Justice League.
I will say, though, that
that's
Blackest
ridiculous.
Night, I can see why they did it with Blackest Night.
Because Everyone's Dead was coming back. Everyone's
Dead. Yeah, I mean, that truly was... Okay.
That was horrific.
It truly was a situation where you can take the setting of the situation and you can let anybody interact with it, and they don't need to interact with the main story of Blackest Night.
Except in passing that they're Black Lanterns.
Well,
that's
yeah, but I mean, like, the setting of Blackest Night was the dead are coming back and the main characters are trying to stop Necron.
Yeah.
But you can have a story where there's just other characters dealing with the fact that the dead are coming back. And they don't need to try to get in and figure out what's going on with this. How do I get involved with the main story? They can just deal with it right there. And you can have a quick 2 or 3 issue story that, you know, is, okay, suddenly the dead are coming back to life. We got to deal with it. Story's over.
Did you ever read Donna Troy's, like, the Titans two-parter?
Yeah, where she got bit?
Yeah, she got bit, and, like, Tara came back for Beast Boy.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
That was the other reason that it was good for connecting, is because bringing back dead characters.
Yeah, for closure, or for opening old wounds. Like, Hawk and Dove come back.
Fucking Wonder, Maxwell Lord came back.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Like, Wonder Woman had to deal with that.
Yep. The Question came back. The original one.
Montoya had to deal with Vic Sage.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's why I think that's a better example of that. That's an event that really, being line-wide, made sense.
Okay, then what about Fear Itself?
Fear Itself sucked.
Well, I know it was I know it was a bad story, but, like, it could have, those hammers could have affected everyone.
Yeah, but they didn't.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I get that if they'd done it right, it could have, but Fear Itself just kind of blew.
Well, it was their answer to Blackest Night.
It was a terrible answer.
Yeah.
Blackest Night was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Fear Itself sucked.
Yeah.
And it eventually amounted to nothing because now the villain of Fear Itself is just chilling in Asgard.
Yeah, I don't know. I never read it.
Oh, you didn't read Fear Itself at all?
Never read Fear Itself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The whole idea behind the Midgard Serpent?
Jormungandr?
Was Odin's older brother.
No, it's okay, I guess. But one of Bor's other kids?
Yeah.
Odin has siblings. In the mythology, Odin's the third born.
He is... It's his older brother who was, like, bloodthirsty and crazy, and Odin sealed him away.
As a serpent?
He can transform into a serpent.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. It was fucking terrible.
Oh, you said you wanted to try this.
I do want to try that.
I do oblige.
Ooh, that's actually pretty nice. Tastes almost chocolatey.
This winter ale right here?
Yeah. Give it a shot. I mean, am I wrong? Is that not chocolate?
Oh, yeah. It's not chocolate. It's some kind of cocoa bean.
Yeah, it definitely tastes malty.
Yeah, well, it's supposed to be. Malt, that's a good way to put it. But it's two-row pale Munich aromatic and special B malts. So probably malt. Well, aside from all the crazy events going on, as far as... hat changes over at Marvel. We've got a new exclusive deal. Marvel has announced that they're making Kelly Thompson an exclusive writer.
So she's written so far.
She did the
Hawkeye, Journey Star Hawkeye. Wars, The Last Jedi, and Rogue and Gambit.
Well, it wasn't the Last Jedi. It was Captain Phasma.
Well, Journey to Star Wars, Last Jedi, Captain Phasma.
Yeah, that
there. There's a colon and a dash in the title.
That's crazy, right? It's like Budokai Tenkaichi 3. So Kelly Thompson's a current fan favorite. She's also the one behind the Rogue and Gambit series, which is actually, like, doing surprisingly well.
Yeah, good reviews for that.
For Marvel. So after the announcement, she had this to say. Marvel was truly my first love, so to be here today, not only writing for Marvel, but going exclusive, she says in quotes, with them is like the definition of a dream come true. She says, I remember visiting Disney World as a teen and being so consumed by an issue of X-Men that was due to come out that I was checking newsstands like a girl possessed until I located it. So yeah, this is everything I always wanted.
Oh, that's heartwarming.
Yeah. Marvel Editor-in-Chief C.B. Sobolski agrees, and he says, from the moment she turned in her first script, Kelly has continually brought big ideas, incredible energy and endless enthusiasm to the Marvel Universe, and every comic she's had a hand in for creating it for us. We're honored to now have her as part of the family here and couldn't be more excited for the fans to read the amazing adventures she'll be taking our characters on next year and beyond.
So we'll see at San Diego exactly, you know, what she's going to be doing next.
Yeah, because they're gonna hold an announcement for her, But it's, you can probably bet that it's going to be some good shit.
So if you've been reading those comics and you're down with Kelly Thompson, I mean, she's been critically acclaimed, so...
Good on you.
You're going to see a little bit more from her. I think this is kind of how Marvel does things. They get those exclusives, and then they kind of guide big sections of their publishing for a bit. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out. But, hey, they got another writer right there in the stable.
Tyler.
Josh. gosh.
10 years, 189 issues later.
Fucking Dan Slott is leaving Spider-Man. This is, okay, is this the longest run on any one comic? Because for a while, I know Bendis held that title for Ultimate Spider-Man. He had the longest single writer run on any comic ever. For Ultimate Spider-Man. Counting, you know, the different title jumps. When it reset with Miles Morales and all that. Like, he basically had the longest run on that book. But I think Dan Slott beat him with Spider-Man. Especially with Brand New Day just slamming him out.
So Dave Sim wrote a title called Cerebrus from 1977 to 2004 that went 300 issues. Eric Larson has been writing and drawing Savage Dragon for 20 years.
Eric Larson is like the saga caveat of our bruisies. We don't talk about Eric Larson in terms of longevity because fucking Savage Dragon, dude. Come on. This guy's crazy.
Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's 101 issue run of Fantastic Four. Chris Claremont was from 1975 to 1991 on X-Men.
Oh, he beat that. Oh, dude. Chris Claremont wins there. Either way, Dan Slott, maybe
Brent, he has a Bendis lead. And Bagley were 111 issues on Ultimate Spider-Man.
So he beat Bendis.
Then. Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Mark Evanier on Gru the Wanderer, 160 issues. It's 189 issues of Spider-Man across his arcs from
starting with Brand New Day.
Yeah, exactly. Which is
an amazing story.
It's not where I started reading Spider-Man. I started reading Spider-Man again at Civil War. And then followed him through Secret Invasion and all the way through.
I'm close to that. I didn't start at Civil War, but I kind of started at the wrap-up, like the aftermath of Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It's got not quite at One More Day.
Yeah, I remember when that. One More Day was coming out.
No, I remember when that was a big deal, and I was already reading Spider-Man at the time. But I didn't start during Civil War. I missed some of the issues where I know, like, people knew he was Spider-Man. They attacked him at the high school he was working kind of thing.
Yeah. He wasn't in high school anymore.
No, he was a teacher.
There you go. You're right. Because One More Day, he went back to high school. Yeah. Brand New Day put him back in college or some shit like that.
I don't think it's that far.
You're right. No, he was a photographer still. So.
Yeah. But either way, this is a fin. Like, Dan Slott has had, I mean, on the whole, a damn good run.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been good. He didn't do some of my favorite things. Like, he didn't do Anti-Venom. That wasn't him.
That wasn't?
I don't think so. Let me see who wrote Anti-Venom. Shit!
Did he do it?
Yeah, Dan Slott wrote New Ways to Die, six-issue series with John Romita.
Okay, so Brand New Day was a rotating cast of writers and artists, if I remember right. But Dan Slott was the bigger one, and he stuck around, and when it stopped being weekly, he was the one that they kept around, and he wrote most of the big stories during the One More Day Brand New Day time period, and he ended up being the one who ran Spider-Man, and he did a damn good job.
The writers on the original Brand New Day were Dan Slott, Mark Guggenheim, Bob Gale, and Zeb Wells.
That's right.
And you are right. Dan Slott's the one who wrote the most of them. Brand New Day itself was 102 issues. Like, the whole thing encompassed by Brand New Day, the arc or whatever.
Yeah.
102 issues of Spider-Man. So the majority of Slott's work was Brand New Day.
And I believe it. He did so goddamn much. And you know what? Now that I think about it, Dan Slott has taken Peter Parker through so much shit.
Yeah, do you remember fucking Gauntlet?
The Gauntlet?
Superior?
Superior was amazing.
That whole lead-up to the Gauntlet was Kraven's Hunt.
Kraven's...
Where he put Spider-Man through the ringer.
What did they call that arc with Kraven's daughter?
Oh, good point. Good point. I don't remember. I think is it Kraven's First Hunt?
It's something like that. It's been years since that. But
I have it. I have Kraven's Last Hunt.
I remember, like, the brutal shit he did. He grabbed her face and ripped it off.
Yeah, okay, so Kraven's Last Hunt is the old school one.
Yeah, that's
from
the original.
Yeah. Kraven's First Hunt, 2008.
That's what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good series.
Yeah, it's when they introduced Kraven's daughter.
Yep.
So, yeah, Died in Your Arms Tonight, Brand New Day Volume 1, Kraven's First Hunt, Mark Guggenheim and Phil Jimenez. Her name is Kraven. She's Spider-Man's newest enemy and most terrifying nemesis, and she just discovered his secret identity.
Yup. So, I mean, it's a big farewell to Dan Slott.
It is. So, I mean, some of the reasons why I like Spider-Man so much are Dan Slott's work. But at the same time, Dan Slott's a terrible person in the fact that he trolls and fights with his audience.
Oh, I love that, actually. I personally have a humongous fan of the way he does it. Fucking
trolls, man.
I'm a huge fan of that because, okay, here's why I'm a fan of it. Neil Gaiman wrote an article one time called George R. R. Martin is Not Your Bitch.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, like, I can people see that. Expect, like, straight answers out of everybody that is a creator of the things they like. And Dan Slott is one of the few comic creators that will troll his fans. And besides almost straight up lying to him and trolling him.
He did, actually.
Yeah.
Peter Parker's Never Coming Back, I Killed Him.
Exactly. Superior Spider-Man. He trolled the shit out of all of them, and he keeps it up. But at the same time, he still writes great stories.
And later after that, when Peter Parker came back, he goes, "I lied, fuck you."
Yeah, I think that's a great attitude for him to have.
All because right.
I think he's adapted to this modern era where everybody's on Twitter and Facebook, and they can interact with these creators, and they want answers right away. Some people in different media or different writers, different whatever, will give teasing answers or whatever. Dan Slott's one of the few people that just goes, here's a thing, and then later turns out, hey, fuck it, I lied. Deal with it, bitch. it's amazing. I think he interacts with people really well because he creates this environment. I don't really know how to phrase this, but he creates this environment where, as somebody who used to really follow him on Twitter, maybe he's lying, maybe he's telling the truth. You don't know. So we used to read an old comic, it's like, check back next month for what's going to happen, and you don't read solicits, and you don't know what's going to happen. That era is gone. You can read solicits 3 months ahead and you know what's happening. When you follow Dan Slott, you don't know.
Yeah.
He tried to keep that air of mystery and he kind of did it.
There's also those people like Scott Snyder who just tell you what's going to happen. Like he did with the Batman Who Laughs.
Remember, well, he told you who it was.
Told you who it was like right away, right?
Yeah. Like that was one of the, when they're interviewing him about what the
what
Dark Knights
metal
were.
Is, yeah.
He basically laid out what the Batman Who Laughs is. What if there's a world, or there's a world where what if the Joker died?
The poison that made the
Joker
goes
right. There's a poison
that
turns
somebody
into the Joker. That's where the Batman Who Laughs is. And it took, 2 months to get to it, and that's exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No mystery.
I don't mind that, though, because
it's not bad.
Metal is not about the mystery.
Well, yeah, no, it's not a bad approach. It's just I like Dan Slott's, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And plus, you do have, you are at the reins of a household name. You are at the reins of Spider-Man. Yeah. So you're pretty much under the microscope anyway. The three. Batman, Superman, Spider-Man.
Yeah, and it goes Spider-Man number 3, number 1 and 2 is Batman and Superman, kind of probably interchangeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would argue that Spawn is coming up in the... No,
no, you would not argue that.
I would not argue
you're
that
a liar.
At all.
You're a liar and a brigand. You're not... That's not true at all.
I'm not true? You almost said you're not true.
You're not true. You are a liar, sir.
I am an incongruity. I don't know. It's the end of a legacy, but at the same time, Dan Slott's going to Iron Man.
This run is going to go down as one of the best Spider-Man runs ever.
But oh, for sure, yeah.
Bring up Iron Man. I am down with him to take up Iron
Man. Did you see what he tweeted?
No,
he says, "I'm bringing the hyphen with me. Iron-Man."
Perfect.
Right?
Okay, do you ever...
Yes. To answer, yes, I do that.
No. Do you ever watch Friends?
For sure.
Do you remember the conversation? It was a random... It's one of the things that...
Wasn't it David Schwimmer that brought it up, or was it Chandler?
No. It was a random conversation between Chandler and Phoebe.
Okay.
And Phoebe asks him, why is it Spider-Man instead of Spider, space man? And he goes, because he's the Spider-Man. His name isn't Phil Spider-Man. It's one of those random things that has stuck with me forever.
I love that about Chandler. He's usually the guy that most guys relate to.
Yeah, because he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's a great character.
It kind of broke my heart when I found out that he was like a coke addict and shit.
Oh, he had problems during that whole thing. Yeah.
You ever wonder why he doesn't do work now? It's because of that.
Yeah, probably.
Although he was in that show, that movie, The Whole Nine Yards. Wasn't that him?
Yeah, with Bruce Willis? Robert De Niro. No, was Robert De Niro?
It Robert was... De Niro is, no, it's it was the with one Robert with Billy Crystal.
No, it was, oh, you're right. Sorry, you're right. You're right. Robert De Niro's in the Shrink movie with Billy Crystal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Matthew Perry is in the Shrink movie with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And there was this, one of them had a sequel.
It's The Whole Nine Yards and it's The Whole Nine and a Half Yards.
That's right, okay.
Yeah, they actually both have sequels, to be honest.
Do they?
Yeah.
All right, well, whatever. Hollywood, same shit, different day.
Yeah, hang on, let me look. I want to know the Billy Crystal one now just because I'm curious. Analyze this. It's Analyze This and Analyze That.
That's right, okay. Both have sequels.
And
okay.
Then, let's see.
So, okay, is it Robert De Niro, Billy Crystal?
Yeah, in Analyze This.
Okay.
And Analyze That. So, The Whole Nine Yards is Bruce Willis and Matthew Perry.
Okay, cool.
And then, is it The Whole Nine and a Half Yard? The Whole 10 Yards?
I mean...
It is The Whole 10 Yards.
Is it The Whole 10 Yards? Jesus Christ.
Oh,
real inventive, God. Hollywood.
For real. Let's see, the sequel to The Whole Nine Yards. This film stars Bruce Willis, Matthew Perry, and Amanda Peet. It's totally a thing.
I'm not surprised.
But you know, that happens often in Hollywood where they do like...
Oh, yeah, Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which one do you like better?
I haven't seen either. I have not seen either of those movies.
So Deep Impact involves Elijah
Wood. Ants in a Bug's Life. I've seen both of those, and Bug's Life is way better.
Ants is good, though.
No, Ants isn't bad.
Sylvester Stallone and Woody Harrelson, Sharon Stone, Dan Aykroyd.
No, it's got a great pedigree of voice actors.
Yeah, yeah,
Gene
Hackman.
It's a decent movie.
Gene Hackman and fucking...
No, it's a good movie, but A Bug's Life is better.
It is.
It's just better. Like you,
Heimlich.
Look, I'm a beautiful
I'm a beautiful butterfly. Francis. Where are you? I'm a stick. I'm here. I'm waving my arms. What? I'm the only branch with eyeballs.
Yeah, the movie's amazing.
Hey, I said no salt.
Shit, I'm trying to think of another
duo like that.
Yeah, there's been plenty. Oh, The Prestige and The Magician. I think?
No, it's The Prestige and
The Illusionist.
The Illusionist. Yeah.
Yeah. Edward Norton.
Absolutely. That happens so fucking often.
Yeah,
dude.
No, it happens a lot. And not only in Hollywood, but in comics.
Yeah, exactly, dude. We've talked about this before.
Synchronicity. It just fucking happens. Yeah. They don't come up with it in the ether. We already talked about how incestuous the comic world is.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They all just, they're probably meeting a bar and bullshit, and then they both publishers make the same thing.
Speaking of incestuous, let's talk Suicide Squad. This is the last piece of news, and then we can get into reviews. We are running long, by the way. Tyler, you know, I am a sucker for DC animated.
Just period? Oh, yeah, for DC animated.
You just couldn't have, you just got a, just
I
got
could
a jab.
Not, sorry,
just
you left that one wide open.
I did. I'm
but
a sucker
also,
for DC
yeah,
animated.
A lot of DC animated is really good.
I mean, from their TV shows to their animated features. Well, not only do we get Gotham by Gaslight this week,
which
on
we
digital,
gotta check out. I'm down with that.
Yeah, that one's gonna be dope. We get
I've heard good reviews on it too.
At DC and DC, we got a exclusive trailer debut of Suicide Squad: Hell to Pay.
It's their next. That was a good trailer too.
It's their next animated series. It's gonna be rated R. It stars Tara Strong as Harley Quinn and you know Christian Slater as Deadshot. Which was an interesting choice.
I don't know how I feel about it, but I guess we'll see.
Did you see Assault on Arkham?
No, I never did.
So they had Tara Strong as Harley in that too, but the Deadshot character was played by Neil McDonough, who you might know better as... You can do it.
I know, it's right there. Don't tell me.
Dum Dum Dugan.
Ah, shit. I was... For some reason, my brain was going, Mick something? No, it's Dugan. Dum Dum Dugan. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he was Deadshot in that. He did really well.
Okay.
But so what we got here is basically an R-rated Suicide Squad where the Suicide Squad is charged by Amanda Waller to go after Vandal Savage, which that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it's going to be. You like... None of this story is going to be surprising at all.
Probably not. There's They're going to get fucked up. They're going to catch Vandal.
And then maybe Batman comes in to save the day.
Batman's going
to
pop in at some point.
Yeah.
Waller wants him because she wants to be immortal or probably...
Or he has the keys to some bomb or some shit.
Yeah, he's got some ancient weapon that she heard about and wants. Who knows?
Yeah. Or she wants him for the squad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Probably, actually.
You know, could be that.
I guess we... But either way, it looks like a good trailer. At least decent.
Mm-hmm. And it
Like, okay, I'll say this. I watched the trailer, and I didn't think, this looks like shit.
Yeah. You're not going to see like Dark Knight Returns level of performances out of these voice actors. No. You're going to see Suicide Squad. But you know what? I guarantee you this movie better than the original, better than the live action movie.
I'm 100% aboard that. God, yeah, it's going to be so much better than that.
It's going to be cogent. It's going to have a beginning, story, middle, and end.
Semblance of sense.
All right, that's Christ. It for news. We ran long on news, but let's get into
reviews. You want to go first?
I'll go first and get reviews out of the way.
All
right. Keeping with my theme for this first part of the year, I will be reviewing Powers, Volume Number 1, Who Killed Retro Girl, written by Brian Michael Bendis.
And this was the arc that the TV show was based on.
It is, but it differs immensely from the comic. So this first volume was actually published by Image Comics back in 2003.
A long time ago. Yeah, this is some of Bendis's early.
Yeah, it's actually, some people call it the origin of Bendis speak. 2000, copyright 2000. God. So yeah, in 2000 was when this was originally published. So the comic book opens with Detective Christian Walker, who was our main character, being called to the scene of a crime. The crime is a little girl is being held hostage by a dude, like probably her father. The dude asked for Christian Walker specifically. Christian shows up, tries to talk the guy down, and then all of a sudden we hear this, like, boom! And they enter the room, and they, like, break down the door. The girl is fine. She's sitting in front of a TV eating peanut butter. And the guy has punched a huge circular hole in the roof.
What?
Yeah. So they pick up the girl, clear the crime scene, get outside. And off in the distance, you see this character flying on a jetpack, and he starts to fall. And he starts to fall right back to where he was. So he falls basically right in front of the cops, and his ass is on fire. And all he's doing is complaining about that. He gets arrested. The ambulance takes him because he's literally got a, you know, burnt ass. And Christian pulls up to him. He's like, "Why did you call for me specifically? I'm a homicide detective. I don't do this stuff." And he's like, "It was Wolf, man. Whenever anybody told us anything about, you know, getting into trouble or whatever, Wolf said you can trust Christian Walker. He'll do right by you. So I called you." Christian's like, "Fuck you, man." And then, like, guy gets hauled off to jail. Walker's stuck with the kid because it was his caller. So that means, like, the kid goes with him until they can get social services involved.
Like, he's in charge.
The little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we go back to police precinct and we get Christian Walker on the day job of being a detective. He's got 15 open cases. The girl is an inconvenience, but, he's also being assigned a new partner, and his new partner is Dina Pilgrim. Little firecracker of a detective. Doesn't really wear the standard, like suit and tie cop uniform. She wears jeans, a belly cut shirt.
What year did this book come out?
2000.
Okay, so maybe it's a, I feel like this is a weird thing to say, but maybe her image is a product of the times.
Sure, absolutely. It's like right around the time Clueless came out.
Yeah, okay.
But Dina Pilgrim is far from the character from Clueless. She's like a smart talking, wisecracking, no-nonsense tomboy that also happens to kick some ass. She's ex-SWAT, and she asked specifically to be put on the same division as Christian Walker. Now, I've essentially...
The same division as him? Or yeah. She has to be put into that division?
She has to be put partnered with him.
Okay.
So I explain this kind of like detective atmosphere, but that's kind of not what Christian's expertise is. Christian Walker is an ex-superhero. He lost his powers. He used to be called Diamond. After a series of catastrophes, he loses his powers and decides that, like, he still wants to help people, so he becomes a detective. He gets assigned to Homicide. One of Homicide's more recent trends in victims have been superheroes. So essentially, he's still a regular detective, but his recent cases have been suicides or kills from superheroes.
He's an ex-superhero dealing with superhero murders.
Yeah, but in the show, they call it Powers Division. No, fuck that. He's a regular homicide detective. There's no Powers Division. But the city that he lives in, the world that he lives in, is populated by powers. There are superpowered people. As this comic is upwards of like 70 issues long so far, I'm pretty sure it's still going, like, but going very Sporadically, yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth a read if you want to see Bendis without a filter through capes. If you want to see his raw
He's really good at
street level characters,
man. You brought up Bendis speak.
And he does it. There are pages where there's just one or two. Remember how last week you were talking about how Invincible reuses panels?
Yeah.
That is rife for here.
That's what I was going to say. He is a...
Right here. Bendis speak. All down the panel.
You read... Okay, I challenge anybody listening, if you don't know what I mean by Bendis speak, go pick up any Bendis trade, and the way the characters interact, you'll understand what Bendis speak is. Bendis speak doesn't quite work well, I think, in a superhero setting. But in a setting with regular people.
Look at this across the pages.
Oh, like, I'm looking at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I see it.
Just, it's an overload of panels. People, like, answering their own questions, interrupting one another.
Well, see,
like,
what I mean is superhero books are inherently about action.
Yeah.
But
Bendis is a talker.
Yeah, Ben, like, books about quote-unquote, which I've said, like, fucking three times this episode. Weird. Regular people. They have a lot more in terms of, okay, we need to... Think about what we're doing. Talk about what we're doing.
Character development.
Exactly. Develop the character, figure out what they're going to do next, and that is where he will excel.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like
But the problem is, like, when we say Bendis speak, he has his own, like, way of introducing character.
It sounds like a pejorative, but it sometimes is, sometimes
it's not. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. Like, hey, yo, what's up? What's up, yo? What's going on, dude? Like, he does have that way of, like, not being necessarily organic.
Question. Does anybody in this book say something along the lines of, I am blank and I am asking you blank?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he does that all the time.
Yeah. Yes, hello, I've been on hold for... Listen, this is a one-sided conversation that Christian Walker has with social services. Yes, hello, I've been on hold for... Listen, this is Detective Christian Walker. Homicide, yes. What? No, I need your help. What? No, is this social services? Well, I have a young... What? No, I didn't hear... No. Like... That's a page. There's a page
Bendis.
Of that. So
he does a lot of repetitive shit, but sometimes it's really good with making a good character.
So I can rag on that all I want. I will say Powers was such an engrossing story to me that I have it all. Because after you get past the first arc, which is who killed Retro Girl, and you find out right away who killed Retro Girl, it's dope. It gets really deep into, like, Christian Walker has some post-traumatic stress from not being a superhero anymore. And he eventually does get superhero powers back. Someone else takes up the mantle of Retro Girl. And I don't think anyone minds the game being spoiled from 10 years ago. But the girl that he saves in the first issue, when she grows up, she becomes the new Retro Girl.
Wow.
They introduce, you know how the mutant growth hormone, MGH, is a big thing in Marvel Comics?
Yeah, it pops up every now and then.
This series has one of those as well, and it's actually a dangerous narcotic.
Is it like a temporary narcotic? Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's like MGH. You take it, and it's like a high.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. There's characters that have a massive backstory with Christian Walker that show up from time to time. One of the biggest villains is... Johnny Royale, and Johnny Royale's powers, he teleports. So he could literally be the suspect of multiple homicides. And it shows, like, Christian Walker has him dead to rights a couple times, but Johnny Royale being what he is, he doesn't really have any hard evidence on him. So it's really cool in that, like, it's a street-level story told about this grandiose superhero world. And I really do dig it. Michael...
Different angle. I like it.
Michael Avon Oeming, I think the best way to describe his art, it's very akin to Scott Pilgrim art in the fact that it's very cartoony.
I can see that.
Very cartoony.
Yeah. I have not actually read a Van Oeming book, mm-hmm. but I have seen a lot of his art, and I think that's a really good comparison. Like, cartoony, like you said, but still...
There's enough characterization in there that it doesn't, like, all look like a Saturday morning cartoon.
I think where the good distinction is in the line work. Like,
Bruce Timm.
The way he draws his characters, like, okay, look at Jim Lee. Jim Lee has a lot of, like, detailed lines on the characters' faces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People like Van Oeming or Brian Lee O'Malley, they just have, like, a simplified thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
and it's very expressive.
It's almost anime. Or
okay,
manga.
Have you ever
sense.
Heard that you should be able to tell a character by their silhouette?
Yeah.
and Van Oming and Brian Lee O'Malley, they have that style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jim Lee can do that too, but you see more Jim Lee's style
in his detail work.
And people
in the
like Jim Lee in their thing, but Van
like
Oming,
Jason Fabok is another example. Of that.
Jason Fabok, same kind of thing. You can tell the outline, but people like Brian Lee O'Malley and Michael A. Van Oming, it's like the silhouette, you can see the character, and then you pull away the silhouette, and it's still the exact same because it's drawn that simple.
Which Pokemon is this?
It's
a Diglett!
Like no, fuck you, and it's Electrode from above.
Yeah, exactly. I may have rambled on about it too much, but I recommend if you're looking for where Bendis kind of... like, this is pre-Ultimate Spider-Man Bendis.
Oh, yeah, this is old school.
If you want to see where Bendis got his start in independent work, this is it. And it's worth a look, man. I still say, like, the guy can write as long as he's got room to do it.
Oh, yeah, he can.
And he does his own stuff.
I will shit talk him all day, but he can write.
For sure.
Like, I have problems with Bendis, but I also know that man, in the right, if he has the right story, that he can write
like
some of those comics of the year.
Jessica Jones. That's a great fucking character.
It's a good fit for him.
Yeah.
Like, he can write great comics with the right characters.
Yeah.
I'm not excited for his action comic shit.
Yeah, where he gets a piece of Superman.
We will see how that goes.
Are you going to buy a physical copy?
I'm going to.
Yeah,
I have to. It's comic book history.
I think I have to.
I have to buy Action Comics 1000.
Do you have any other comics like that? Because I have, like, Death of Superman. I have an original of that.
No.
I have the first issue of Blackest Night, but that's not necessarily a big thing.
I don't own any other Milestone comics.
I own a pristine issue of Black Suit appearance in Secret Wars.
Really?
Secret War, yeah.
That's crazy. You know Spawn? Or sorry, Jesus Christ, Spawn. Wow, what's wrong with my brain? Venom. Venom premiered during the month of my birth.
I mean, there's 12 months in a year, so I mean, that's pretty likely...
No, I mean literally. Not. I don't mean like the month of my birth is
month
in
year.
A month of the year. I mean
no,
literally
month and year.
The month, the year of my birth, Venom premiered.
Cool.
I'm more Venom than you, motherfucker.
I would deny that.
I know you got a tattoo. Shut up. I'm going
I'm like
to talk
physically
to you guys.
More
We're
Venom.
Gonna move on. We're moving on. I'm gonna tell you guys about what I picked up this week.
It's Venom number one.
No, it's James Bond 007, The Body, issue number one. It's written by Alice Cott. He's done a lot of James Bond stuff recently.
He has, yeah.
Artist Luca Casalanguida, who's also done some James Bond recently.
This episode is now titled, I'm More Venom Than You.
Perfect. I love it. So I wish I could tell you if I know this is a continuing series, because I don't. I will say one thing, the end of this book, it ends with next, the brain. So maybe this is like issue one is... The body.
Was this Pinky?
Issue two is the brain. It's Pinky. Now, I was going to review for people Betty and Veronica Vixens number two, but I did number one. I want to give it a little more time for the arc, so I did this one. I read it right before the podcast, and I will tell you, if you have listened to my reviews of Dynamite's. Dynamite Comics, James Bond Comics, and you like how I describe a lot of them as like kind of quick, one-and-done James Bond spy shit, this is the quintessential example of how they do amazing Bond comics.
Well, I remember you did like Eidolon, and that was like a six-issue series.
Yeah, that was one of Warren Ellis's ones.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have quick, just like one-and-done stories. This story is, it's bookended as James Bond getting an examination by a doctor.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's beat to shit.
Aw.
And the doctor's doctor's fixing him up, checking his eyes, stitching up his wounds, and kind of like asking him what happened. And Bond can't necessarily tell him the whole story. So we get a couple pages where like Bond is saying the story to the doctor. We see the narration. Well, at the same time, we see what actually happened, and it's different. So it's set up like that, but... The biggest, the whole story is Bond is getting sewn up. Bond went out on a mission that they learned about. MI6 learned about 15 minutes before he went on it. There was an assassination threat on somebody. And they had 15 minutes to get somebody out there to the spot, pretend they meant to be there, try to find out who's the assassin, and stop them.
Sounds like a perfect Bond mission.
It is a quick-ass one-and-done. Bond is into this place as a waiter at a party. Like, I mean,
that's totally not a cliche.
Yeah, like, look at this. He is a waiter at a party, and we get through his talk with the doctor. You know, the doctor asks him, like, how do you figure this out? Like, you have 15 minutes to get into this spot. How are you going to do this? I imagine it's going to be with, like, you're going to look at, I don't know, you're going to see what they're looking at. You're going to see how they talk, body language. And Bond's like, yeah, it's body language. We're going to watch him. And you see how he figures out who the potential assassin is, and then how he watches him, and how he goes after him, and how he, of course, because it's Bond, we know, this ain't even a spoiler, he stops him.
Well, yeah, it's Bond.
It's Bond.
He never doesn't win. Like, you know what I mean? He always wins.
He might lose the battle, but he wins the war.
Yeah.
In a movie. But in the comic, he fucking wins.
Like, in Quantum of Solace, he kind of lost.
But he didn't. Yeah. Now, I will say, this was a solid issue of just sweet, sweet Bond espionage. If you're not down with James Bond, you're not going to be down with this issue. But if you like James Bond being James Bond, you're going to be down with it. And the other thing about it is why I'm not sure this is a one-shot or the beginning of a series, and why the end where it says next, the brain, kind of confused me, was because, I will spoil this, he does stop the assassin, but he also pulls a note out of the assassin's jacket that implies this guy didn't do this alone and may not necessarily have wanted to do this. So there's a little bit more to the story, and there's even a little more than that in the book that kind of spoils, or not spoils, suggests that, okay, the brain is who's behind it, and this series may go much longer. As a James Bond book, fantastic. I love this. As a setup for a series, I wish they'd left a little more clues, but I'm still intrigued enough that I'm going to buy James Bond the Brain, 100%.
Yeah.
In the hopes that it's as cool as this one, where, like, I could read this issue.
What if it's just about his libido?
I mean, that's every James Bond movie.
No, I know, but, like, the brain, it's a pun. Like, it's just about his libido.
I mean, I'd still read it.
That's where his brain is. You know?
I'd still read it.
He thinks with it.
I think it was a solid, solid issue.
Well,
solid like a dick.
2018.
That's 2018. That's 2 weeks in a row you missed that.
Could have been a great
dick. You only got to hate on bad things.
Like a dick?
No, James Bond dicks woos all the women.
Woos all the women. You know what also makes the panties drop is Venom.
Point of contention, no.
Well, I'm more Venom than you, so I say that
it's fine.
That Venom makes the panties drop.
So we have a weird
weird third segment of this week. So another little piece of news. There was a gathering in Sao Paulo, Brazil recently. It was pretty much a fan convention.
Was it a Comic-Con?
I don't know if it was a Comic-Con, but the director of the current Venom movie, Rob Fleischer, or I think that's his name. Let me make sure to get that one right. But he did like a live cast with the guys in Sao Paulo, the fans in Sao Paulo, and basically gave you the basis of Ruben Fleischer. He gave you the basis of what the Venom movie is going to be based on.
Yeah, he gave us two inspirations.
It would be the
Lethal Protector,
Jesus Christ, and the Lethal Protector, Jesus Christ. And
okay, hold on. I will say this, and I'm going to leave this bit in here for everybody to hear. So the Adventure Zone is a podcast Adam and I listen to.
Yeah.
They ended their big main arc. They started going to multiple tiny arcs of different setting, different people DMing to come up with the best thing to continue. And one of them, one of the main characters, his power, it was a superhero story. It was like a Hulk thing with a Hulk character, like this timid human resources person became this woman called Cardala, this Inuit goddess. She didn't know a lot about the modern world, and they got taken to a basically Bible-themed theme park. And why I was bringing this up is because at one point somebody's talking to her about Jesus and the Bible, and she misinterprets it as a weapon. And she starts talking about Jesus and his terrible Bible. Terrible scythe-like Bible. It's amazing. Go listen to it.
So,
but anyway, sorry. Continue.
Ruben Fleischer said that basically the Venom movie's spiritual guidance will come from Lethal Protector and Planet of the Symbiotes. two stories that came out like early to mid 90s that basically involve solely, well, Lee the Protector is just Eddie Brock for the first couple issues, and then Spider-Man gets involved. But then Planet of the Symbiotes is about Spider-Man, Venom, and Scarlet Spider defending the planet Earth from an attack of symbiotes from Venom's planet, which is later explored, 2 years ago by Bendis on Guardians of the Galaxy?
Oh, yeah, something like that.
But regardless, so we know that Tom Holland showed up on set to film. We don't know that if it's going to be Spider-Man or just Peter Parker.
They did say, though, that should Venom be successful, he'd have a bigger part in 2.
I didn't doubt it, yeah.
But they would not show down until 3.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a good idea because Venom himself can exist as his own
and
character.
And I'm hoping that the way this movie works out is that they actually have Venom be a good main character.
Mm-hmm. Like a lethal, like an anti-hero.
Like a lethal protector.
Like a lethal protector. So,
like a Logan style.
Yeah, I suggested that we do some Venom kind of third segment based on this news, that we kind of have a direction for where, or at least an inspiration for where the movie is coming from.
Yeah.
So first of all, I wanted to talk about the origin of the character. So the concept of Venom, and this is something I just learned this week, the original idea for a new costume for Spider-Man that would later become Venom was conceived by Marvel Comics reader from Norridge, Illinois, named Randy Schuler. Marvel eventually purchased the idea from Schuler for $220 and a letter from editor-in-chief Jim Shooter. Let me finish. Jim Shooter sent a letter to Schuler acknowledging Marvel's idea to acquire the idea from him in 1982.
What was the idea? Did they say specifically what it was?
A new costume for Spider-Man based around black and white.
Okay, so not like a symbiote, just a black and white Spider-Man costume.
Okay, so the original, let me read it again. The original idea of a new costume for Spider-Man that would later become the character Venom was conceived by a Marvel Comics reader in Norridge, Illinois, named Randy Schuler.
Dude, those were the fucking days. I bet
when you could write into Marvel and be like, "Hey, what if Spider-Man got a new costume?"
And they go, "Here's $200. We're taking it."
Exactly.
Dude, right now, like the closest I can think of in terms of fan interaction is there's a Magic the Gathering. Is a humongously popular card game.
Mm-hmm.
Their designers are not, I don't know if they're not allowed or they just, as a policy, do not go on websites where that people make custom Magic cards, because if they ever saw a custom card somebody just made up and then actually printed a card that was similar, and somebody could prove the link between this guy went
and
on
that
this
guy,
website,
yeah,
and then eventually this card got printed, there's trouble there. And back then, Marvel just went, here's $200, we're taking that.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
And, you know, it probably wasn't a kid. It was probably, like, a dude.
Yeah.
Or
actually, probably was a kid, actually.
So what happened was, in 1982, Jim Shooter, along with writer John Byrne and artist Mike Zeck and Rick Leonardi, decided that they would give Spider-Man a new look. And the new look appeared in Secret Wars number 7. Or number 8.
Yeah.
Let me actually make sure we got that one right.
They were sucked in, and like he lost his costume, went to the computer console, and just like, here's my costume area. Boop, boop.
It's 8. Secret Wars number 8. Actually, what happened was Thor got his costume fucked up. And so Thor went into the middle of this battle room, and he was like, hey, computer, give me a new costume. And it did, and it gave Thor kind of an updated costume. And then Spider-Man was like, huh, that worked. I think I'm going to do the same thing. And he did, and he came out, blah. So and it's a pose that's been used and reused again and again and again. Excuse me. It's from, like I said, it's number 8 of the original Secret Wars. And that's where the idea for the symbiote started. And then Venom first appeared in Spider-Man number 300. Where are we going here? Written by, where is my link? There it is. Venom made his first appearance in The Amazing Spider-Man number 300 in May of 1988, Tyler's birth month.
Yeah!
The symbiote first came to Eddie Brock. It was in the events of Peter David's run Sin Eater in Spectacular Spider-Man. There we see the symbiote fall off of Peter Parker onto Eddie Brock. And so we have this long legacy of Venom being a part of Eddie Brock's life. First, he starts off being a villain for Spider-Man, and then he moves into being his own person in San Francisco, comes back and
being
forth.
A potential anti-hero, hero kind of thing. Yeah.
And then he comes back and forth into Spider-Man's world frequently. And eventually, I mean, for those of you out there who don't know, Eddie Brock's character was a fellow photographer with Peter Parker. He turned in a fake photo of Spider-Man doing a crime. Peter eventually proves it wrong, but in doing so, he gets Eddie fired. So Eddie has this really big hate of Peter Parker.
I personally, I really love, like Spider-Man 3 sucks, but I do, I have like this like campy, goofy love of Spider-Man 3 for the scene where Eddie Brock is in the church and he's going, God, please kill Peter Parker.
Yeah, exactly,
and
right?
And immediately gets taken over by Venom. Like, I don't know what it is about that scene.
It's probably because it's Topher Grace and you're just like, this is bullshit.
This is ridiculous. Yeah. And then suddenly, Peter's in the bell tower. The bell's ringing. The suit comes off him, and it drips onto him in a really great transformation sequence.
It's actually pretty good because when it ends, he is Venom, but like it's a jump. It's a jump cut.
Yeah, it's a great sequence.
You've got there's this long history of Eddie Brock as Venom, and then weird enough, right before Civil War, the symbiote switches bodies.
And there's
goes,
a long period of people goes, switching bodies. There's a lot of Venom hosts after that.
Yeah, it goes to Mac Gargan.
Scorpion.
It goes to the Scorpion. And it fucks up the Scorpion's life for real. But one of the best things is during Dark... Like, my favorite part of it is during Dark Avengers when Norman Osborn takes over for his Spider-Man.
He creates
a pill that Mac Gargan eats and he becomes Black Suit Spider-Man.
Yeah, no, but that... He was a great addition because... He also occasionally let him loose to do what he wanted.
As like a weapon.
Yep.
He's like, we'll leave it for Gargan. And Gargan's like, nice, dude. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I behaved myself. I can now go ham. And to quote Adam.
Yeah, you can go ham. And that was actually
And then
one
he would
really
tee off
great...
on people's faces.
See,
and then...
the thing I appreciate, like, I think, okay, as a comic reader and big, longtime comic fan, I really think that Eddie Brock is Venom. I think that is the best thing for Venom to be a part of because of the connection between Eddie Brock and Peter Parker, and because of the way that Venom, the symbiote, interacts with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
the jealousy
like, it
of
hates
being...
him for rejecting him, kind
yeah,
of thing.
Exactly. That's
I think
one of the things
two,
I didn't mention is like there is it's a literal symbiosis.
Yeah,
which...
like those two work together as a good mirror. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing.
And, like, Spider-Man can't, like, because he was part of Spider-Man can't sense the symbiote now.
Exactly.
Like, he's an antithesis.
It's a fantastic, like, two sides of a coin kind of thing. Mm-hmm. He's a good nemesis.
But where Spider-Man can think abstract, Venom is, like, one-minded.
But the thing is, that is one of the best parts of Dark Avengers, is the way they brought in Venom as the Spider-Man stand-in.
Yeah.
The way they did that was fantastic. Because
it's such a dupe. Like, just like Wolverine is a dupe.
Oh, exactly. Like, it's the same powers, but a different person, mm-hmm. controlled somehow. Which is the whole theme of Dark Avengers. Is it's the same people, just coerced into doing what Norman wants.
Yeah, like instead of...
it's a Thunderbolt.
It is the Thunderbolts, yeah.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, instead of Hercules or Thor, it's Ares. Instead of...
Spider-Man, it's Venom. Instead of Wolverine,
it's Daken. Yeah, instead of Songbird... Miss Marvel.
Instead of Hawkeye, Marvel, it's Moonstone.
Yeah.
Instead of Hawkeye,
it's Bullseye.
Bullseye. Yeah, it's so good. That's one of my favorite Avengers eras.
Mm-hmm, me too. From Mac Gargan, who was a great... Like, Mac Gargan is Venom during the Anti-Venom series. Which is when I fucking lost my shit because Eddie Brock comes back.
Oh, Anti-Venom was incredible.
Mm-hmm. So what happened with Eddie Brock is he essentially when the symbiote left Eddie Brock during that time, Eddie got cancer like bad.
Oh, like, he got big time
like
cancer,
terminal cancer.
I mean, he got that radioactive alien symbiote in him. I bet he got all kinds of cancer.
Yeah, right. He got like Planet X cancer.
Cancer X.
Yeah, exactly. So. During that time, he interacts with Mr. Negative, and he also, is developing his own antibodies. Like, his body is regenerating from it, but still is fighting this cancer. And then, all of a sudden, he just becomes flushed with anti-venom.
Well, and then Venom comes back into him, doesn't he?
Eventually.
Well, no, I thought anti-Venom was...
Oh, during that?
Okay, Mr. Negative touched him.
Uh-huh.
That's what it was. Mr. Negative touched him, and because of the Venom bits in him...
Mm-hmm. The remnants expanded, plus Mr. Like, Negative.
It switched, and he became anti-Venom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was... I loved anti-Venom.
Yeah, his one of the fingers became hypodermic needles that would suck out any problem.
He's one of the few, like I don't know how to describe him. Characters who are created as kind of a gimmick.
Like, well, they work.
They work, and not only do they work, but Anti-Venom had a wrapped up story.
Yeah, it ended. Yeah.
It ended. Like, if Anti-Venom had a beginning, he had like a middle where he had kind of knew what was going on.
Well, him and Peter Parker were interacting was great because Peter Parker's like, don't come near me. You get rid of my powers.
Yeah, and then he had his end, which was him being a hero.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing.
Did you ever read his 3-part series with the Punisher?
Yeah,
I love that.
It was
they
good.
Go down to Mexico and like save someone from a cartel.
Yeah, Anti-Venom was an amazing character.
Yeah, and then he's
I'm
done.
I'm a little sad that he's not going to come back, but I understand. I really think he is a character that he had his story, and that's where it belonged.
From Matt Gargan, we go into Flash Thompson. Flash Thompson was had his legs blown off during the second Iraq War. And was essentially wallowing in a VA hospital, and somehow the government gets control of the Venom symbiote, probably because
I don't understand how that happened.
It's probably because of how Dark Avengers ends with Siege, and how the government takes over Hammer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they capture the symbiote, and they give it to Flash, and Flash is actually able to harness the symbiote. They alter the symbiote, so we're like, as long as Flash isn't in Venom form too long, he has control.
That's right.
But then when he's Venom
like
for too
he's
long.
He's like a 24-hour clock or something. He has a clock, and as long as he transforms back into, like, he pulls the symbiote back in.
Yeah.
Before the time limit, he's in control.
But otherwise, he's Agent Venom.
If he went too long, he's forever.
Yeah, if he went too long, he'd be Venom. Yeah, exactly. There's other people that have the legacy of being Venom, but right now, in the Marvel Universe, Eddie Brock's got the suit back. And it's all back to
I need to catch up and see how the hell he has that.
It's not hard. It's just comics. That's how he gets it back, dude. It's really like it goes into this
because
guy named
comics.
It goes into this guy named Lee Price for like 3 issues, and then eventually loses the symbiote to Eddie Brock and Spider-Man when they take him down and he is arrested by NYPD. Yeah, like it takes like 3
issues.
And
Eddie's like, "Hold on, Peter. Look, this guy doesn't deserve it. I'll suck it back up. Okay, yeah. Cool. I'll keep control of it for a bit."
Pretty much. It's actually a black market deal. For some reason that we don't know, the Venom symbiote separated from Flash Thompson and left it in a weakened state. In its weakened state, it latched onto the first thing it found, and it was Lee Price. Lee Price went on like a rampage after getting it.
He's probably high as fuck on that Venom.
But then Eddie Brock and Spider-Man took it down, and Spider-Man has and Eddie's got it back. And that was in Venom number. That was in. Yeah, Venom number 150 when they went back to legacy numbering.
Ah, that makes sense.
So, that's kind of the history of Venom. I wanted to talk about, while we wrap up, I want to talk about like the last, either the way you were introduced to Venom or some of your outstanding moments of Venom.
That is a hard question.
So, the way I was introduced to Venom was through the TV show.
I knew about Venom from comics before the TV show, but so, I do remember the old Spider-Man TV show with Venom.
I want to bring up something about the TV show. So the guy who played Venom, because there was Eddie Brock, who was voiced by someone else, and then there's Venom. Venom was voiced by Christopher Daniel Barnes. Do you know who that is?
No.
He is Prince Eric from The Little Mermaid.
Okay.
He is Greg Brady from the Brady Bunch movie and a Very Brady sequel.
What?
And he is Venom.
Jesus. Okay.
I thought that was the shit. He also plays Venom in Shattered Dimensions and in 2099.
Okay, well, they brought him back for some things. Okay.
But he's Venom, essentially. He voices Venom. And that's where I met him. That's where I met the character was in the show. And in the show, he is the anti-Spider-Man.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It totally does the whole Sin Eater story arc and stuff. Actually, if you remember that show, they would give the title of the comic in the beginning, after the credits. They'd be like, Sins of the Father, issue 2.
I know the Spider Slayer from the show.
Yeah, exactly, not from the comic. But it was in the comics first.
It was. Yeah, no, yeah. I know it was, but I know it from the show.
So I just really, that's where I met Venom. And I think that representation of Eddie Brock is one of my favorites because it really did show off from when Peter had the black suit to where he was walking on the side of the building and he was just changing suits randomly. He picked up a car and he's like, man, I used to have trouble with a taxi. I could probably pick up a bus. Yeah. And like, there's all this stuff that he's talking about. I'm like, Venom's dope. And then you see Venom fight Spider-Man for the first time and unmask Spider-Man in front of J. Jonah Jameson and stuff. And
you're like, I don't remember that.
Venom is he did. But Jonah couldn't get the camera in focus, so he couldn't see Peter's face.
Ah, okay.
Like, Jonah was looking through the camera, everyone else wasn't. That's what I like Venom so much so that
you have a tattoo.
I have a hierarchy of villains. Norman Osborn is the best Spider-Man villain. Venom is number two.
I agree with that hierarchy, actually.
And then, like, I have a hierarchy for DC. but my Marvel stuff is based around Spider-Man villains.
Well, I think the reason I think that Marvel's different from DC is that...
We also never mentioned that Venom is the first, and then there's Carnage and Toxin and
a shitload. Fuck yeah. All them. The only
reason Carnage is good.
Well, Carnage is good. The only reason they matter, though, is because Carnage comes out of Venom, and Carnage is going to be the Venom movie antagonist. Essentially, they're all garbage next to Venom.
Carnage is pretty dope.
Okay, Carnage is the most unique. I'll go with that.
I like Carnage.
No, Carnage is totally great.
Like, Cletus Cassidy
is totally different from Venom, but all the other symbiotes are just like, this is 80% Carnage and 20% Venom. Like,
oh, no, Toxin,
fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck all that. Fuck the rest of them. The reason Carnage works is because you could spin him as, like, the worst parts of Venom spit out.
Well, yeah, because he's also a serial killer.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, Cletus Cassidy is... That's another thing that the show did really well was introduce Carnage.
I don't remember how they did it.
The same way they do it in the book, where they're wheeling him in like Lecter. And then Venom has, like, the symbiote. Like, Venom shows up to Spider-Man, and he's like, hey, just so you know, our suit shed. We don't know how it happened, but it shit out another copy of us.
Oh.
Hey, Spider-Man, my bad.
My bad, bro. Yeah. Sorry, there's one of more of me out there. I hope it doesn't latch onto a serial killer.
I think he shows up, and he's like, Spider-Man. Our suit mated. Like, what?
Damn, bro. Like, what are you talking about, Eddie? God damn, I deal with your shit weekly. Fuck, yeah. What are you doing?
So what do you have for final notes on Venom?
Well, what I have is more focused around the movie.
Sure.
Because, I mean, we all have different experiences with the show, the comic, the whatever. I mean, even between, like, the regular Venom and Ultimate Venom, there's humongous differences that...
Venom was designed in the Ultimate Universe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that is an amazing twist on Venom, and that he is a...
He's not alien, he's terrestrial.
Exactly. Yeah, he's not an alien being that, like, grafted onto Spider-Man and learned from him. He is just a being that is created like a...
It's a cure for cancer, yeah, and it does cancer, it does cure.
It grows and does weird shit. It's another take on it. But where I'm at on Venom in terms of the movie, though, is we don't know anything about it except for Tom Hardy as Venom. Carnage is apparently in the movie. So is Tom Holland as Spider-Man. What I'm hoping is that they find a sick middle ground.
I don't want symbiote and creation?
I don't want them to have an alien origin.
Really?
I don't.
It would probably be too convoluted.
Exactly, because... The biggest problem with Spider-Man 3 was it just, beyond being completely ridiculous.
Well, they had too many villains.
Well, too many villains, and it was too ridiculous. But just Venom just drops out the sky and just lands. And like, it's just so...
I mean, do you remember how he came back in the first place?
What do you mean?
He came back, in the first comic, he came back from the... Well, I mean, in the show, he came back from the moon.
But I mean, it just feels too ridiculous for a movie.
Sure.
It's just out of nowhere, Venom drops out of the sky.
It was like a comet or a meteorite.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's just, it is too kind of like Satan ex machina. Kind of just, it's just fucking, he's the devil's here. We're just gonna, it takes over.
Is it Diablo ex machina? Is that what the Latin is? Because it's Deus is.
I think that's what it would be. But I like the idea of the Ultimate Venom being a man-made creation. So what I'm hoping is that the Venom movie strikes a good balance.
Diabolos ex machina.
Diabolos ex machina. I hope they avoid that. That they have a Venom who is a man-made creation, but has some semblance of sentience. I think that's a good middle ground for Venom, where it's like somebody trying to create something that is either a super soldier or a cure for something.
That, to be honest, in the new version, it'd probably be Super Soldier Serum.
Probably Super Soldier.
Just to keep it...
Just with the rest of the Marvel Universe. Level. Yeah. No, I think that's the best idea.
Someone was trying to recreate Dr. Erskine's formula, and you know how we made the Red Skull? Well, now they made Venom.
Yeah, exactly. But, like...
Or the Hulk. That also... Yeah, the Hulk
like
is also...
something there. I like the idea of Venom as a creation. I don't know how they would have Spider-Man involved, but I like Venom as a character who is a creation. Like, no matter how you look at it, Venom is a creation. Even as a suit, the only reason he looks like Spider-Man is because Spider-Man is the first thing he imprinted on.
Well, yeah, and in Secret Wars, Spider-Man ordered, like, had that machine make him a new suit.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's the first thing that this creature imprinted on.
Yeah.
I like Venom as something who was, like, first got a semblance
of... Almost like the shape of water.
Like I haven't seen that.
No, 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 but it adheres to the thing it's in.
Yeah, like...
Like a bowl, a can, a bottle.
That this being had a semblance of identity... It imprinted on the idea of this spider person. Mm-hmm. It either like was on him or it saw him or something. It modeled itself.
Some would say it's in him.
It modeled itself after him. And so every host after that is a spider copy.
Yeah, it's like a... Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? Well, yeah. Agent Venom kind of only in the eyes. Otherwise, he's tactical.
He still shoots webs.
Does he?
Yeah.
I thought he had, like, he's got guns and shit.
Well, he has guns and shit, but he still has the ability to shoot webs.
I've never read an Agent Venom comic.
Oh, he does. I like that idea because I really enjoy, like, a hero and a villain that are opposites, but also very, very similar.
Yeah, Sinestro and Hal.
Exactly. Like, they have the same powers, but they're very different.
Superman and Darkseid. Superman is odd.
Yeah, like they're the same powers but different morals. Spider-Man and Venom have very similar powers, but they have very different viewpoints. But it's all because Venom basically modeled himself after Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that the new movie will translate that successfully. Because everything, what do you think of Venom? Venom is goo Spider-Man.
With teeth.
How do you justify that? Without Spider-Man being a part of it. Like, really, how do you justify...
Venom's just watching TV, and he's like, oh, the spider one's cool.
Either way, he still sees Spider-Man and decides to be like
Eddie, Eddie Brock owns the YouTube channel that Spider-Man's featured on. That's maybe. Where it comes from.
Who fucking knows? That's all I'm saying about Venom, is that I like him as a dark mirror to Spider-Man, who, no matter what, will never admit that he wants to be like Spider-Man.
Or he wants Spider-Man back.
He wants him back. Yeah. He wants to be like him. Something like that.
Like a hurt or a strange lover.
He desires Peter Parker and Spider-Man to be a part of him, but he never can. Peter Parker will reject him always. But he models himself after that.
It's an exercise in futility.
Every time.
But it's still something worthwhile.
Exactly.
For him.
Yeah, every time he models himself after that. And
he gets a little bit closer to a hero, too, like just every time.
And a lot of times he's closer and closer and closer to a hero, but he'll never reach it.
Yeah.
Because he's a being of hunger or some weird, whatever the writer decides.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've had plenty of fun talking about symbiotes and Marvel. It's been a heavy Marvel episode.
Yeah.
But I hope everybody had fun listening. Hopefully we'll have Adam back next week. No new Comics We Plays for a little bit, but... we've been talking about it for a while, but Red Sun is on the horizon, I promise.
It'll happen.
I just got to get these guys nailed down to do it. Also, if you guys want to hear us do a dramatic reading of another comic, please fucking shout it out. And we'll see you guys next week on Comics Brew. I bid you adieu and wish you all the best of luck in life and your endeavors. May the devil always be at your heels and never closer.
And I'm Tyler. We'll be right back.